we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
And we are back. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. It is Tuesday, and we are on America Out Loud Pulse, the hourly show during the week involving physicians of different specialties in different places talking about what it means to be a doctor, what medical freedom means, and especially in the times of the last 2 years, what our profession has to address and change for us to be a free society that has medical care, medical decisions, informed consent, and everything that we expect from our doctor to be taking place for the future. So first off, ask here to reintroduce Dr. Stuart Tankersley. He's a family physician from Montgomery, Alabama. And I will go ahead and ask him to introduce himself again. We are new, so a lot of y'all probably may have not heard the first show or are unaware of who we are, so we'll introduce ourselves real quick.
Thank you, Jordan. Welcome, everyone, to the podcast. I'm a family medicine physician. Back in 91, I enlisted in the Army, then I went through officer candidate school and served in our National Guard, Alabama National Guard, in the Army for, I retired 6 months ago and learned a lot of things about how big picture things. I retired as a colonel, so I got the experience, had the experience of seeing how big picture is evaluated, and then the tactical issues are then addressed. And in a normal day-to-day operation or normal day-to-day, I work in my clinic and have been treating several hundred patients with COVID the last couple of years. And thanks to the science that our group has been able to distribute and discuss with each other, we've been very successful. Thank the Lord, none of my patients have died in the last year. I think I've had maybe two who have been in the hospital for 3 days, and that was it. Not as large scale as your practice has been in successful and being successful at treating this, but nonetheless, we're thankful that we've had the opportunity to treat these patients individually because everyone's different. And even though we're not supposed to look at them from the public health perspective as different individuals, we aren't supposed to do it as we were trained. And part of the my experience in the last 26 months, I've been very involved in the state, both through the National Guard initially and then as an advisor to several high-ranking people in the political structure, as well as appointed to the vaccine working group for our state by the governor. I've seen so many things that just don't make sense from the way we were trained. And so that's what I'm looking forward to getting in again today with Jordan so that we can try and peel back the onion so that we can get to the core that is needing to be addressed and has been ignored, shunned, almost outlawed, and in fact is in some states. From a physician's point of view, and excited that we have the opportunity again to explain our perspective and invite dialogue with those who are on the opposite side.
Thanks, Stuart. And I'm Dr. Jordan Vaughn again. I'm in Birmingham. I am an internist. I am the son of a physician that was always and continues to be an independent thinker and a critical thinker. And those skills were given to me, thankfully, by him. Again, I go back to, I learned a lot of information at my academic medical industrial complex where I went to med school, but I learned how to be a doctor and how to take care of people from my father, because that's where he learned it, by actually doing it. And I guess, again, medicine's unique in the fact that I'd say my father would say, well, we're lucky because we literally get paid to help people. And that's such a opportunity. It is such an awesome thing. Very few people, their profession allows them to do that. But with that comes a lot of responsibility. And it also requires a lot of, basically giving treatments a lot of times based on the person in front of you. I mean, there is science out there, but a lot of times you have to take into account who the patient is, what their age, what their sex, what their race is, what their other medical history is. And I think the nuance of that is what makes a doctor a doctor. And a lot of that has been taken from us. They have tried to cram us into this kind of cookie cutter fit all to replace a lot of it, just like they're doing with a lot of other things, saying, well, it's not that hard to be a physician. We have it right down here. You can put in the symptoms and it spits out a medication. And in all honesty, that may work for, 70% of the cases. But God knows that we don't know which percentage the patient in front of us is on until we do it. So the first thing I'd like to do, Stuart, is really get kind of an update on COVID in general. I mean, we actually are seeing a couple different things. One, we are seeing Omicron. It has kind of, at least in Alabama for me, has kind of halted in terms of its effect. Some of that's seasonal. I think seasonality is an important thing to think of. But some of it has to do with, again, it infected so many people that once it gets to a critical mass, and God forbid we use the term herd immunity, because evidently that's kind of in 1984. That's a word was in the past we used, but now it's a word that doesn't exist. But it does exist. And again, if everybody at a party already had the thing that is going around, that party's probably a safe place to be. And that's kind of the very layman term for it. But Stuart, what are you seeing in your clinic in terms of Omicron?
Yeah, I haven't had but one patient in the last month with it. But if you look at the data from around the world, and we usually are a couple of weeks behind Europe, and we may see another spike coming our way next week. Hopefully not, but we'll see if it plays out like it has in the past. I don't know of anyone that succumbed to Omicron in December or January. Of course, like I said, none of my patients died, but I don't know of any others that died from Omicron. So the narrative that was going around from public health officials back in January was that the Omicron was 10 times more deadly than the flu. I never saw evidence for that. But you mentioned about our being disallowed from using herd immunity, I think is an important point because it gets back to the fundamental principles from which we were trained or which we were taught. Trained is a different thing that we spoke of last time, but which we were taught in how to evaluate viral outbreaks. If you look at the number one purpose for vaccines in the past has been to further the herd immunity. And Dr. Scott Harris, our state health officer at the introductory meeting to the vaccine working group, he validated that. And since then, we've been told that the herd immunity doesn't matter. We need everybody to get the vaccine. When in fact, we now know that the vaccine's effectiveness against different variants from the initial is lacking, to say the least. And so I think that we got to see what's coming our way. But fortunately, as this group of doctors, concerned doctors that we work with, have proven time and time again, very effectively, we have algorithms that will help when we individualize them to the patients in before us. And so we've had a lot of experience and engaging our patients, not running away from their illness, but engaging the illness. I'm optimistic, hopeful that my patients by now have the treatment algorithm drilled into them. And hopefully when they get early symptoms, if it's not clear to anyone by now, early treatment is crucial. Even if you're not in the 65, 60-year-old age group with comorbidities, it's still crucial to take it seriously in order to get over the illness, because it is a bad infection in a lot of people, no matter the age group. And so we can diminish the timing of the virus, the viral load, and the symptoms, as you well know. And
one thing that is kind of, you know, in the past, I would have said, oh, COVID clearance, young people, even probably 18 to 25 year olds, they're going to clear it. It should be fine. But the more that we learn about the spike protein in general, whether that's spike protein that is elicited by a genetic injection or it is from the infection, we know that that spike is pathogenic. We know that that is the part of this virus that causes significant damage to our bodies. And so in many ways, because the more I see, even with this Omicron variant, there's a recent paper, it was a preprint, and it actually was looking at the vaccinated. So these are triple vaccinated people. And it was from Marking and Harvell out of Stockholm, Sweden. And what they noticed was the actual ability to culture the virus as well as find the spike protein present in serum did not get shorter. And especially in these vaccinated people, it didn't get shorter. The symptoms may be no longer present, or the symptoms may not last long. But in all honesty, that's worrisome, the fact that the virus itself is still present and the body's not cleared it yet your body's symptoms aren't present. And so to me, again, that goes back to our goal, at least in the first window of the virus, is to stop viral replication, because viral replication leads to the evidence of spike protein in the serum. Spike protein, we know, causes damage. That's why we keep on saying that these genetic vaccines are not what they have been advertised for, because they do produce the very thing that causes damage with the virus itself.
Yeah, studies have shown that the amount of viral, the amount of spike protein that is produced after getting one of these biological agents injected into you is significantly higher than the worst of those who are sick from the infection. So it's kind of odd. I've thought it very odd for over a year now that they chose the spike protein, the known pathogenic protein of the 27 proteins on this virus. They chose that one to be the one to build the platform of the biological injection off of. It really
amazing. Again, it goes back to, you know, in the past, even vaccines that were inactivated, they were a fixed amount. You put a passive amount in the deltoid. This is not that. This is a fixed amount of instructions. But again, I mean, just like the instructions on your computer, it can go to millions of computers and the output can go everywhere. It's not a fixed amount of the actual output product. It's a fixed amount of the minimum need to produce it. And so then you get uninhibited, really meaning unknown amount of production, and for what time? We don't know. Neither of those were really studied, and I think that leads us to lots of worries that need to be addressed.
And along with that is the lipid nanoparticle that messenger RNA is packaged in is pro-inflammatory, and studies are very concerning regarding many of the side effects of that biochemical reaction. It is worrisome, to say the least.
The other big change with Omicron, with the presence now of, again, a lot of people can't keep up with this, Omicron BA1 was kind of the first variant. Now it's BA2. They removed another monoclonal antibody from the market. Again, monoclonal antibodies are just a tool in our toolbox. Again, one of the things we can probably revisit maybe after the break is, how diseases work. A lot of people think diseases just need one thing to take care of them. Diseases, really how doctors work is working on where those different disease, the disease process affects your body in multiple different ways. A lot of things we do affects that. And so again, that's an important tool, an important early tool, an important tool that decreases the viral load, which again, the more virus you have, the more spike protein you have, the more inflammation you get, which leads to more or higher morbidity, higher mortality in the end. But the question is, why did they continue to take these off when they look at the data and say, hey, you know what? The ability to neutralize from this citrufimab doesn't do what it did previously, so we've got to take it off the market. Yet, on that same graph, they'll have the Pfizer, BioNTech, as well as the Moderna vaccine, and their neutralizing antibodies are actually worse. But no one pulled those. No one questioned whether those needed to be taken off the market.
Yeah. When we come back from the break, I think it's very important for us to always remember how are we doing in the big picture? How are we doing? And Johns Hopkins every week updates the data, and it's a list of 185 countries, and America still for months ranks in the bottom 20 out of 185 as one of the worst countries in the world, despite our technologies and advancements. Why do we remain so low in surviving this per capita? It's just amazing that we accept these failures.
Down at the bottom feeder level, the one good thing we have going on, Stuart, is we did pass Chile. So we are up to 19th out of 180 countries.
Yeah, that was last week. Yeah, that's
And we're on the heels of Latvia. So great. I think both, you know, again, both those countries, I guess. I mean, I know a lot of, I know not a lot, but probably two or three people from Chile. They're not bad people. I'm sure they probably got pretty good health care. And Latvia, I mean, again, it's an Eastern European country. Who knows? Maybe the Soviets knew something about things and they just had already instilled great viral treatments back in the day. But both those countries aren't high on the list of places I would have thought to visit if I needed to be cared for.
Yeah, right. You know, in Alabama, we yell Roll Tide and War Eagle a lot because we're very successful in a lot of the athletics. But it seems like in the last few years, we've gone down this awful road of education, and we are accepting the relatively high death rate compared to every other place in the world as normal and acceptable. I think it's atrocious, and I hope we can help people understand how we need to be more aggressive in changing what the narrative is.
You've been in that situation. The person next to you is sniffling, or worse yet, coughing. Flu, cold, and SARS-CoV-2 are everywhere. Would you like an additional layer of protection to reduce these threats with an invisible mask? Sold by hundreds of pharmacists and medical doctors, our American-made povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray, Cofix RX, lasts for hours deactivating viruses and germs that make us sick. Find a retailer near you or buy online at CofixRx.com. America Out Loud listeners use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us on America Out Loud Pulse. Dr. Jordan Vaughn and I are here. Stuart Tankersley are here to in this segment talk about going back to the basics, the science. What is going on with coronavirus, SARS-2. Why are people being injured and harmed by the vaccines or the biological agents and the virus itself? Jordan, you mind going back to the basics for a minute?
Without a doubt. I think one of the most important things in terms of arming our audience to be able to, in a way, fight for their ability to receive treatment is to understand what a disease like COVID is and what it is not, and then also understand what medicines are and what medicines are not. So I think the first thing is, when we talk about a disease, a lot of people think there's always just one, you know, kind of magic silver bullet. And you'll find that that might be the case for some, you know, bacterial diseases. It might be the case for some other things. But when we talk about viral disease, a virus itself is going to do its work and cause damage. And in many ways, what you have to understand is the process at which it does that, and then how do we respond to it? So again, when we talk about viral diseases, as Dr. McCullough has said many times, we have never had one specific treatment for a virus. We usually instead try to stop the virus from replicating, limit the virus's pathogenic properties, which in this case would be the spike protein, from causing damage, and then at the same time, cool the immune system off. Because a lot of times when a virus is new, we don't have kind of the blueprint on how to fight it in our bodies, in our both innate, adaptive, as well as cellular immune system. And therefore, all of those are working at once. And when they show up, a lot of times how I describe it to my patients is, what's going on is you have a fire at your house, and instead of the fire department showing up and spraying the part with the fire department shows up and basically floods your whole house. And so in a sense, what we need is, we need targeted therapies to put the fire out. We don't need your house flooded, because again, your house flooded will cause more damage than the little fire in one room. And so that's one of the most important things I need a lot of people to understand is a disease process, especially like COVID, goes through stages. And Dr. McCullough has talked about that a lot, going from the viral replication phase to the inflammatory phase to the what we call microthrombotics phase. And again, each of those therapies that we have in our toolbox matter. And again, the earlier that you get this therapy on board, the better the outcome. And again, when somebody says, well, we know that one thing doesn't work, you can agree with them, because I'll agree with them. We know that one thing doesn't work. We're not proposing doing one thing. We are proposing fighting the disease process with all the tools that we have. Second of all, when we talk about medications, medications are nothing more than molecules that act on cells. And as a human, a mammal, those molecules act on human or mammal cells. But again, other mammals, again, you probably went through your dog or your cat's prescriptions before, and you'll notice that a lot of the medicines that they're taking for their ailments are similar to the ones you are going to take. And the reason for that is because they're mammals and they have cells that are mammalian cells. And so a lot of times what I try to tell people is, just because one thing that you've always heard is an antibiotic, the real answer to that is, we know that that molecule that we have named, that we classically call an antibiotic, has what we call bactericidal properties. It actually kills bacteria. But that does not mean that is the only thing it can do. So a lot of times in medicine, some of the biggest things that we look at is the fact that the medicines that we initially thought treated this, we end up using them 10 years later for something we had no idea that they actually had results on. In some ways, they're not even repurposed medicines. They're just medicines that once we use them in widespread, or have them in widespread use, we start to see that there's other effects that are positive. We also see other effects that are negative. And here's the funny thing is, we call those negative things adverse reactions. And so in a lot of ways, the fact that medicines have adverse reactions are a basic, you know, agreeing with me that all medicines act in different ways on cells in general.
So yes, I think that's a very important point that we need to continuously make with people. And for example, this unbelievable hit piece done on ivermectin that the Wall Street Journal wrote about a few weeks ago, this trial that was done 7 or 8 months ago that was just a ridiculous attempt by a scientist, if they call themselves that, to take an honest evaluation of ivermectin, for example, in that article. There was a peer-reviewed article from, I think, May or June of last year, where it showed the 14 mechanisms of action that ivermectin, for example, has against the SARS-2 virus. Only 5 of those are directly against that. The other 9, I believe, were against the inflammation that this virus causes. So it's not just like a penicillin for a type of streptococcus bacterial infection. This is taking a comprehensive comprehensive approach to the major inflammation that's occurring in different ways with this infection. But like you were saying, we get the infection, we get the viral replication, we get the hyperimmune response, then we get the blood clots. But these different phases require different treatments, but that requires the physician treating them to understand that. And it's been amazing that it seems like so few have engaged in that learning and using of their trained mind to evaluate and treat appropriately.
And that goes back to why I think, as we were talking about at the end of last segment, you know, why in this certain instance where the whole world is addressing an issue like this, why has America done so poorly? And one of the reasons is our system, which for many other things like cancer or other kind of diseases that may not act quickly, spread widely, research in a lot of ways can take time. A lot of the medicines that need to be done are novel medicines that need to be basically created out of thin air. And that always means the padding of the pharmaceutical industry's pocketbooks. I don't think that's a bad thing for those kind of issues. When they come up with a new medicine that has a potential to heal people and treat disease, I think you should be rewarded for it. We live in a country that really rewards entrepreneurship and actually protects protects patents or what we call intellectual property. But when you're addressed with a disease like COVID that is instantly spreading and is causing all kinds of damage, the key is to understand the disease process. And I will argue that we know more about COVID all the way down to the molecular changes in your serum, blood, and also how those changes continue for months than any other disease in the history of the world. Okay. And in many ways, what that meant was we were able to go back to our toolbox, look at these molecules that we have, molecules that over the last 100 years or more have been proven to work in multiple different ways on cells, and we know their safety status. And so the beautiful thing about that is once you understand the disease process, you know how it works, and you have medicines that act at different stages of that process, you're able to chip away at its ability to cause morbidity and mortality. And I think that was what was underappreciated. Instead, most of the physicians within my area here were waiting for what I would call the Soviet commissar to tell them what was available to treat and what was the magic bullet. And to me, that just baffled me because it was a misunderstanding about how we treat, or first of all, misunderstanding of what disease is, and second of all, misunderstanding of how we treat disease.
And not only that, the FDA telling us that we can't use something or we shouldn't use something when in fact that's never been their role before, like you have mentioned many times. It's just a different world we're in today.
Not only that, a medicine that they said we could use before there was ever even the word COVID mentioned.
Right.
There wouldn't have been any reason to stop us from using it prior to that. Again, it goes back to the credibility of the FDA. It's either safe or not. And in that case, again, every medicine has benefits, has risk, has adverse events. I do think informed consent is important in this case because we are using it in a way that may not be exactly you know, in the book for what it is. But anytime I use a medicine that's off label or a medicine that is, we know and understand the mechanism of how it acts and we know the disease that I'm trying to treat, I tell the patient, this, we're using this in a different way, but we know it, it probably works. And here, just like any other medicine, are the benefits and here are the side effects and adverse, you know, reactions that might go along with it. I think that's just, that's what doctors do. And I think, I mean, it just, it baffles me that it was, you know, just questioning the ability and not only that, pulling it away from us.
Right. Not only
very fundamental thing.
Yeah. Not only pulling it away from us by other physicians and national journals, but for the first time in my career, pharmacists having usurping my our authority that we've been and responsibility that we've been given in our training and education. And it's very unfortunate that there doesn't seem to be much outcry against that. We can get into that in a little bit. But it's just amazing that, back again, none of these people that disagree with us on the other side of this are our enemy. That's not at all, that's unhelpful and harmful. We just would ask them to seek to look at the evidence. And I think one of the things we can do most importantly for those that might be considering treating patients differently and more effectively would be to go to a website. I think a very valuable website would be the C19study.com. And it gives a, it's updated daily with all these different agents are evaluated. And it's a running meta-analysis of all these 30 or more agents over the counter and others that show the clear benefit of some treatments over others, even though they're very less, they're much less expensive than the big pharma agents. They are at least, if not more effective than almost all of theirs, with many more studies demonstrating their positive effect.
So Stuart leads me to kind of discuss what happened in Tennessee last week. The Senate in Tennessee has approved a bill that should be passed by the House and passed by the governor to allow for access to ivermectin. The interesting thing about this was that when I actually read into the legislation, the physician really, you know, in our bill, and we can talk about that in a second, in our bill in the state, what we want is the physician have a right to treat, where you know, it's codified that this is what a physician does, make the best decisions for the patient in front of them. Tennessee, and I'm not really sure the actual reason that they sidestepped it, but they have kind of even sidestepped the physician and instead made it where it's available at the level of the pharmacist being able to, you know, kind of even give it to you without a physician's prescription. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it sounds like kind of the opposite situation in our state and most, where the physician wants to give something and a lot of the pharmacist usurp that authority and responsibility. It's interesting. I'm going to look into that and find out what the Tennessee's Medical Association's perspective on that bill would be.
I can tell you, I don't think they're in favor of it. But
obviously, if they weren't the ones pushing it, right?
But the interesting thing is, me and Stuart were involved here in the state in something in a similar way, and we actually called it Physician's Right to Treat Bill. In many ways, the funniest thing I actually had happen to me was, as a businessman, I have more lawyers than I know what to do with, which is never, anyway, they're expensive and they're never fun to have on your, but they're good to have on your side when you're trying to protect yourself, I guess. But I ran that bill that we actually were trying to be passed in the Senate. And I think it actually passed through the committee by my lawyer. My lawyer was just baffled by the fact that what you're basically putting in this bill is what I thought doctors did anyway. And he was surprised. I said, well, go ahead and go look at, you know, Title 22, which is where we get, you know, the state gets authority to regulate health and physicians. And you might see that it's not codified. And I think the reason that it's not codified is I don't think the people that wrote Title 22 in our state back in the 60s ever thought that there'd be a time where your doctor wasn't allowed to prescribe a medicine he thought was right for you and it was safe.
There has to be a reason for it, doesn't it?
Exactly. It's funny. It's almost like that was an implicit given when the legislators in the 60s wrote our code for the health authority that that doctors that's what doctors do. So my lawyer thought it was pretty funny that we were having to get it codified. And not only that, when we were trying to get it codified, our own state association, the Medical Association of the State of Alabama, which is actually responsible for making sure physicians retain the ability to take care of their patients with the least encumbrances, I actually think that's what they, you know, set out to do, was against it. And I think, to me, the reason that they claimed that they were against it was because of a concern for the pharmacist. But I reminded them that they're not the pharmacist association. But again, maybe they're having a little, a little identity crisis at our medical association. I'm not really sure if that's, you know, true or not.
Yeah, it seems like that some entities that shouldn't be are co-opted by people that are counter to what we stand for. So this past week in our state legislature, they didn't allow the – Alabama is a unique state in that our state health officer gets to make laws and have an authority that has no jurisdiction or supervision by an elected official. And they were trying to – there was a push to try and make it a law so that at least he or she would be responsive to the governor. But that didn't get voted out. So we are still, after 3 years now, three sessions of the legislature, still stuck with the same paradigm that has been unsuccessful for yet another year at least.
And I will go, we'll actually talk about this in the next segment, but if you think that this current crisis or this overuse of power or this pandemic and how it's changed things is over. It was just 2 year kind of sidetrack and things are better and it'll never happen again. We'll talk about what's going on in Shanghai and remind you that we need these laws and these powers to change because unfortunately it could be around the corner that they pull back out their pins and lock you inside.
Along with a healthy immune system, clean air is vital for optimal health. According to the EPA, we spend 90% of our time indoors, where germs are most concentrated. It's essential to clean indoor air. Genesis is the only technology that quickly, safely, and effectively kills pathogens both in the air and on surfaces in seconds, reducing the viral load in any environment. The powerful, well-built Genesis fogger produces a dry, ultra-fine mist using HOCL, which occurs naturally in our own immune systems. We'll be living with airborne diseases in the future. New viruses and antibiotic-resistant superbugs are no problem for Genesis. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next. Visit GenesisFogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at GenesisFogger.com/OUTLOUD.
Let the silent voices be heard. It was the rallying call that started it all. It's a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news to societal and cultural stories, 6 amazing years of news blogs, informative podcasts, and great talk radio. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
So we are back. This is America Out Loud Pulse. Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley with ConcernedDoctors.org. We're an organization. Me and Stuart are two of the people of this organization that makes up probably around 75 plus physicians in the state of Alabama that are committed to making sure that now and in the future, we take care of our patients and making sure that our patients have the right
to accept or deny a treatment and get the informed consent about all the things that really any medical intervention has. And I think that brings us back to the fact that as we have had some failures at the legislative level, as we try to restrict the powers of some of these bureaucrats, or actually in our case, a position that has authority but no elected or executive oversight, it's really been, you know, evident that his powers need to be limited. A lot of people say, you know, this is it. You know, the last 2 years have proven, we know that it won't ever happen again. We know that that the things that happened, we've learned from them. And my question is always, how did we learn and what do we do about it? And I think that answer, Stuart, is at least in Alabama, I don't think we've done anything other than the virus itself is not as present.
Yeah, that's right. Last week, one of my sons and I were watching an interesting movie, The Big Short. It was a movie put out maybe 10 years ago about the collapse of the economy back in 2008. And it was a very interesting movie, and it has a lot of parallels to what we're dealing with now. And that is, if you watch it, unfortunately, the language is a little stronger than I like. But even everyone in the system was incentivized to ignore human nature and the facts about what they were doing. And that led to these the three main character groups in the movie saying, wait, this is insane. You can't do this. But when the regulatory agencies, similar to FDA, the FDA, unlike most agencies, 45% of their funds, according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., 45% of their funds come directly from Big Pharma. And when the regulatory agencies lose their mission because the people there want to get out and work and make more money for the people they're supposed to be regulating, or when the banks, for example, in 2008 were allowed to and encouraged by the Senate. And by the way, the senator from Alabama, Richard Shelby, was in charge of the banking committee at that time. But when all of the forces were wanting to press, make money, who cares if it's legitimate or not, because clearly they were not, then look what you get. Millions more lives. I remember there was a guy who still has a show on CNN who watched his show one Sunday morning. He said in 2008 that there were projected 250 million people in the world were going to die because of the slowdown in the American economy. These lies and deceptions, whether real, whether intentional or not, but the people responsible for them refused to act in a responsible way. The unintended consequences of these deceptions and lies is unavoidable. And that's, I think, where we are today in so many respects. Whether you look at H.R. McMaster's book, General H.R. McMaster's book, Dereliction of Duty, looking back at the Vietnam War that showed so many grievous mistakes that led to so many bad outcomes. There's just time after time in the military history and civilian world where the deception eventually catches up with itself. And our country was founded where the founders understood the Judeo-Christian principles that humans are not good. We will, for selfish reasons, really hurt other people because, unfortunately, we need to be, it's just the way it is since the bite of the apple, we need to be checked and balanced because we on our own will not be a good force for a force for good in our communities and in our families.
I think that's one of the reasons that our founders, as the first documents after the setup were, it was a restraining document. Meaning, yep. here is the powers that the federal government has, but the first thing that they're going to make is a Bill of Rights that basically has amendments that says Congress shall make no law for this, 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 this. Because again, they understood that men left to their own desires are evil. And I think that is repeatedly reminded to us throughout history. It's funny. A lot of people all of a sudden think men are good. Men are not.
I would just say to that point, how are you to say somebody's a man? In this insane world, we don't even know what a man and a woman is, supposedly. So it's just amazing the stupidity with which man will always catch himself if there's no humility and desire to know the truth and seek it and live with it. And
And even that argument that, you know, the even current discussion to rid the language of differences of things like sex, just again goes back to trying to dehumanize get rid of the things that make everyone unique, which is what I would call as a Christian is the image of God in us is what makes us different and what makes our lives and who we are as people valuable and makes it worth defending. And I think that's as we start to lose that in our court system, in our legislators, heck, even in our physicians now. You know, I go back to the fact that I'm not sure how somebody can be a physician and not believe that the person in front of them has value. The other thing is you go back to how it's structured. One reason that it's so easy for a guy like Fauci to sit inside the walls of the executive building or the NIH and proclaim things for you to do is because he doesn't have to deal with the ramifications and the blowback from the people that actually have those things brought upon them. And it goes back to why I think one of the silver linings of this whole debacle is that a lot of people have realized that their local leaders and the power they have, even though they didn't know they had these powers until the last 2 years, that needs to be curtailed. You know, again, we go back to even our state health officer. The fact that most people don't even know that it's elected by a private entity to have statutory or basically legal authority and have no executive or elected accountability was news to everyone, maybe even to Scott Harris himself in our state.
No, I think he knew.
Okay. Well, it was news
to
me.
And I think his bosses knew, yeah.
Yeah. And to me, again, a lot of times when legislators get together and come up with a law or come up with, basically stuff that's passed, you know, that's the reason there is courts. It needs to be challenged. It needs to say, hey, this just because it's written by a bunch of guys that, you know, get together and hang out in Montgomery for a couple months a year doesn't mean it's legal. And so, again, that goes back to even state health officer. If that was to be challenged or brought to the level of the Supreme Court at our state level would have to say, well, actually, this needs to be replaced because this cannot continue to exist. Now, the funny thing is it's continuing to exist even after the worst crisis, I would say, in Alabama's history in terms of where the leader and their powers came from. But again, most people were kind of, I guess the other problem about man is we're lazy and we forget. And, the same thing keeps on happening to us. It's not surprising that if you look at places like Shanghai right now, it's not far-fetched to think that we might be back in this whole lockdown once again. Because again, the people at the top love power, and there's no better power than to be able to say what somebody can really do in their daily lives. And I think that power is too seductive for any politician or any leader to give up without a fight.
Yeah. And unfortunately, third session in a row where very little was done in addressing COVID other than the distribution of the billions of dollars for the hospitals and nursing homes to receive without the doctors treating patients getting access to it very much.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, if you go ahead and tonight or the next day, just a lot of what's going on in Shanghai is not really being broadcast over here. I'm not really sure why. Right now, Shanghai, which is one of the wealthiest, it's pretty large, got about 25 million people. Since April 5th,
They have had a zero COVID policy, which basically means you cannot leave your house regardless of whether you have food to eat, that you're not even allowed to leave for food. The food will be delivered to you, but they're currently having problems doing that. And if anyone tests positive, you are apprehended from your house, including your child, taken to the hospital and quarantined. Again, a lot of people say, this just looks like a dystopian movie that, you know, it'll never happen here. But I would ask most people to look back in their memory bank. It's not too far back, but I would have said most people wouldn't have even thought that would happen in March and April of 2020. And again, I want you to ask yourself, what have you, your state, your local leaders, your national leaders done to make sure that it doesn't happen again? And I, unfortunately, very little has been done. And
that's very important question. Yeah, very, very important question.
I did think one thing about Stuart when this, there's a actual video of the people over the last couple of nights in Shanghai are kind of screaming in their high rises that they can't leave out the windows. And it's causing quite disruption in these cities. Cause again, it's a very dense city, and you know, you could have, you know, significant amount of people within this kind of almost block of high rises that go to the sky, and they're screaming out the windows. There's a drone that is actually going around and telling them in Chinese, but it was translated on one of these sites to say that basically they need to comply and control your soul's desire for freedom and do not open the window or sing. So again, it's interesting that the translation of what the drone says is literally don't be free. Get rid of, I mean, and again, I would say that would be the natural human response, is a desire to be free. Again, in China, it's probably the desire is not as it's been beat down over the years. But it's just funny that they even focus on the fact that, you know, really get rid of this desire to leave your house, get rid of this desire to be free, because you're not. So just get over it.
And you know, that reminds me of really a lot of the motivation for people in our group to do what we're doing. And that is at the end of Revelations, the book of Revelation, not Revelations, at the end of the book, 21 verse 8, it lists the eight groups of people that will burn in the lake of fire for eternity. Second on that list is the non-believer, the non-follower of Jesus. First on the list is the coward. And so I think we Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long, who has been brave in the course of great adversity in the at Fort Rucker down in South Alabama, who has presented to the U.S. Congress very troubling data that the military has, yet they are abusing their positions and their leadership responsibilities. But what we're hopeful of is that the people that are in charge, the quote leaders that are in charge at every level, in every organization or agency, would assess why they are not allowed to change the narrative. Because if you try and change the narrative, you can look at Governor DeSantis and a few others, but there will be round criticism despite the populace loving what they're doing. And that just takes courage on any leader's part to do the right thing. And I hope we can help them, encourage them to do just that.
Yeah, and at least at this moment, unlike these people in Shanghai, we live in a country that allows you to be brave, meaning you can be ridiculed for being brave. You can be, you know, your friends might speak bad about you. You might be tore down in the media or on Facebook, but it's very different in China to be brave. And sometimes
life-threatening.
Yeah. Not to know where you're going to end up tomorrow. At least here, the fear that we have might be social, might be financial. In China, it's their lives. And so the problem is, we're not far from there. As long as we, again, freedom's only as good as your ability and right, you know, your drive to defend it. And I think that's one of the things. I mean, as citizens, if we have rights that are being violated, if we don't stand up to them, they're not a right. Meaning,
and what is that giving our children, right?
Exactly. We're gonna, and on the unfortunate outcome of this, and we can see this from kind of the world elite kind of Davos like oligarchs that rule a lot of the world. Their goal is to make a compliant and basically dumb and really muscleless underlings to really probably produce the things that they want to have. And I think that's the end result in a lot of this.
Yeah. Another encouraging message I would have to the leaders that that have the positions the Lord's allowed them to have would be, hey, look, what's the downside? One guy went to prison for the 2008 crisis that killed maybe 250 million people. Just one person went to prison out of all that. So what's the downside to turning and doing the right thing?
Yeah. It's the fear is a lot of times manufactured. And I will say, at least in the COVID realm, given that we have still, at least at Florida, Alabama, Georgia, we still have leaders that believe in freedom and believe in the Constitution. Your ability, even though it might not be popular, might not be praised in our social media circles, your ability and their ability to defend it, it still exists. But again, I say still exists. The goal of a lot of the people and a lot of the, the federal government, actually, I think they were talking about in California right now, one of the things they're trying to pass in the Senate is to actually have some laws that prohibit physicians and people from speaking against health authorities.
Yeah, threatening your license.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, again, I mean, it's California is a little crazy, but it's not far-fetched to think that the people here, especially as half of the physicians probably left California so they could come to Alabama. Actually, I've talked to some physicians at a certain university down the road that says it's easier to recruit than ever because and they're getting all kinds of talent. The problem is that talent comes with it. Their politics, and hopefully their politics have changed, but that's not always the case.
Yep.
Well, I think this wraps up the evening. Anything you want to say on the way out of here, Stuart?
Freedom, the ability to put responsible constraints on yourself. Take courage and seek it.
All right, and we will see you next week, guys.